For Monday, March the 5th, 2007, committee members, we have two bills up for work session this morning. There was a public hearing that had been scheduled previously on House Joint Memorial 8, but that was pulled from the agenda on Friday because there is a very similar subject matter bill. It's House Bill 2868 that has been introduced and we're expecting will be referred to the Judiciary Committee, and we wanted to set those two for hearing together, so that will be set some fairly early time, but that bill is not yet in the possession of the committee, so we don't know exactly what date that will be. So that leaves us just with the work sessions on House Bills 2322 and 2362. I will open a work session on House Bill 2322.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2322 is requested. It was filed at the request of the Judicial Department. It allows, among other things, an affidavit in support of a search warrant to be sworn over the telephone, requires the judge administering the oath over the telephone to state in writing the manner and time of the oath's administration, requires a police officer giving the oath to note in the affidavit that is sworn to over the telephone set forth time period for filing an amended notice of appeal or corrected a supplemental judgment, clarifies the prohibition against judges practicing law, clarifies the automatic stay of a judgment, authorizes prevailing party in appeal to recover the costs of copying the trial court record, allows the Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court to set certification copy fees for appellate and administrative records and services, gives the Chief Justice authority to allow a circuit court to meet in a location other than the county seat in an emergency, clarifies the process for consolidating juvenile dependency and domestic relations cases in a single circuit court. Chair, members of the committee, you have the dash one amendments in front of you. Also have Jim Nass and Kingsley Click here from the Court Administrator's Office. The dash one amendments going over to page four of the bill clarify a discussion that we had at our last meeting concerning judges, particularly municipal and justice of the peace courts, judges practicing law. And it basically says that they can't practice where they preside, and nor can they be in practice where they partnership or however else they do it with someone who does. And then you have the dash 13 amendments, and this is to clarify an ambiguity in current law as it relates to the Court of Appeals. Court of Appeals cases are heard in three-judge panels, or in this case they're called departments, and there's an ambiguity as to whether the judge requires a majority of the judges in the panel to be Court of Appeals judges. From time to time, circuit court judges will sit pro se, and this is just to clarify that those judges may be elected and appointed. And Mr. Nass is here, and I'm sure he can address it better than I can, if need be.
Okay, committee members, just to remind you, this is the housekeeping bill that we have a version of in each session that deals with a range of matters from the Judicial Department, and the bill was held over for amendments because when we heard it, there was an issue of ambiguity that was identified on page four of the printed bill about just under what circumstances could a judge not preside over a matter if the judge had a practice relationship with someone else. And you see the dash one amendments here, which now clarified, as you see on lines 5 through 13 on the first page of the dash 1 amendments. Essentially what it says is that if the judge, who's a sitting judge, can still be an attorney of record in a different court than where the judge presides, and either that judge directly or that can't be engaged in the practice of law with an attorney who appears in the court in which the judge presides. And then a separate rule for pro tem judges, that is, those are part-time judges who come in and hear particular cases, and that the pro tem judge cannot preside in a particular proceeding in which that pro tem attorney or serving as a judge or somebody who's engaged in practice with the judge is appearing. And then this, although it wasn't discussed in our last hearing, the amendment in Section 13 is just clarifying something that perhaps somebody might pick on at some point and say, well, you know, if there was a judge who had been appointed to fill a vacancy and not elected yet, because typically those appointments are middle of a term, that they might, perhaps their qualifications to serve in the panel might be challenged if we don't have the statute read correctly. Any discussion about the Dash 1 amendments or the bill generally? Then do I hear a motion on the Dash 1 amendments?
Mr. Chair, I move Dash 1 amendments to 2322.
Representative Barker moves the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 2322. Any discussion of the motion? Any objection? And the Dash 1 amendments are in the bill. Is there a motion on the bill?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2322-1 to the floor with a due pass and on the consent calendar.
Representative Barker moves House Bill 2322 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation to be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion of that motion? Hearing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Wisnett,
we're voting on House Bill 2322, the housekeeping bill for the
Department. My vote is aye.
Chair McPherson?
Aye. House Bill 2322 moves to the floor, as amended, moves to the floor with a due pass recommendation to be placed on the consent calendar. I will close the work session on House Bill 2322 and open a work session on House Bill 2362.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. House Bill 2362 comes to you from the Oregon State Bar Estate Planning Sections. What the bill does is would allow probate proceedings to follow the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure concerning the verification of pleadings and allow pleadings to be sworn to and not notarized. You have the Dash 2 amendments, which also include the Dash 1 amendments. And the first part of the amendments, what they do is they basically move the notarization, the statement above the line as far as signature goes. And then the Dash 2 amendments allow verification and probate matters to be sworn to in the same way and done in civil proceedings by written acknowledgement. It's similar to what the main bill is, and Warren Darris is here to explain it. It has more to do with the practice and how statements are given to all the lawyers in the process and proceedings.
Mr. Darris, why don't you come up and just explain to us that change, which is not something that was discussed when this bill was up before us.
I did bring a copy of my testimony updated to reflect the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay, that would be great.
I just want to introduce myself. I'm Ann Thompson. I'm an attorney, and I'm here on behalf of the Estate Planning and Administration.
That's very good. We're in work session here, but why don't we hear from either or both of you, and just to begin by identifying yourself for the record.
Chairman McPherson, members of the committee, my name's Warren Darris. I'm an attorney in private practice in Portland and a member of the Estate Planning and Administration section of the bar, of which Ann is the vice chair, I believe.
I'm a member of the executive committee. My name is Ann Thompson.
Okay. The original bill focused on the issue of verification, which Oregon authority has indicated must be done under oath or affirmation signed before a notary public, and it followed the procedure adopted in 1979 for general civil procedures in the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure that eliminated the requirement of notarization in favor of a declaration under oath, a declaration without the notary that has the same legal effect as the notarized oath or affirmation. The amendments expand that same concept into another area in which probate practice has, since 1979, lagged behind general civil procedure because of the rules of civil procedure that were adopted in 1979, and that is in the area of certificates of service. When we file something, or when we serve something on someone, when a notice is published in a newspaper, a proof of service, proof of publication has to be filed in the court. since 1979 in general civil proceedings, that has not required an affidavit, something that has to be sworn to or affirmed before a notary, but instead it's merely done upon certification. And what the Dash 2 amendments would do, in addition to correcting that minor mislocation of the declaration in the Guardian's annual report, the main thrust of those many pages of the Dash 2 amendments is to eliminate the requirement for notarization of that certificate of service and replace it with the certificate of the person who completes the service, the certificate of the publisher of the Daily Journal of Commerce. And I would hate to be that person who must have to go through 100 times being notarized to provide all the certificates of service for the things that they publish. Eliminate the need to have the additional notary process and, again, give it the same legal effect. Two reasons for that, as I explained last time, are, you know, one, notaries are frequently not available in small law offices such as Ann's and mine, and I can't tell you how many times I haven't been able to get something done on an evening or weekend because I didn't have a notary. And two, because the practice of notarization has really become a farce. What you're supposed to do to to take somebody's oath or affirmation to complete an affidavit is a fairly lengthy formal process, and in my experience it simply isn't being done, and I don't think it's in our interest to have procedures in the statutes that are not followed in modern American society. The way a notarization, an affidavit is supposed to work is the same kind of thing you see in the television courtroom dramas of the person raising their right hand, the notary reciting the oath or the affirmation, the person responding, "I do." That simply doesn't happen. You know, you go into a bank and ask them to notarize an affidavit, and they'll ask for your identification, watch you sign it, and notarize it. And I think we need to, you know, move ahead to conform our laws to practice to the extent that we can in good faith do so and accomplish the objective of our laws.
Representative Flores.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Darris, thank you for the explanation about why you're moving away from the requirement for a notary. I'm a little concerned that, considering the fact that to become a notary, you have to take an albeit open book exam, which is pretty extensive and full of detail. Maybe the focus of some inquiry should be why notaries are not performing their functions or sometimes fraudulently performing functions that should be upheld. But how just by eliminating the requirement for an acknowledgement by a notary and relying on a verification make any difference as to the truth or the accuracy or the veracity of the document that's being verified?
And again, Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, again, we're trying to preserve the legal effect. In other words, for the declaration under penalty of perjury as compared to the affidavit sworn or affirmed under the penalty of perjury, we are preserving that same legal effect for the act, but eliminating the act that, for some reason, modern American society seems to find offensive. I mean, as a notary, I find that if I expect people to go through the ritual, they look at me like I'm nuts. I mean, that's really the response you get from a lot of people. You don't have that response in court where oral testimony is being given, but I think it would, to answer your broader question, I think it would make some sense to look at the notary statutes and where written affidavits are being given to provide a process where the language is in the affidavit, so the notary need do nothing more than ask the person signing the affidavit, "Have you read the affidavit?" is it true? Have the person say, I do. People will accept that. I do. You know, frankly, my practice in, for example, will affidavits is I explain the affidavit to the client before the affidavit is notarized. I do require them to raise the right hand and say, I do, after having the explanation. But in terms of getting clients to go through the ritual, I've just found that in practical terms in modern American society very difficult.
Follow up?
Go ahead.
Thank you. And I agree with you to a great extent. I guess my concern is that someone that is going to be making an affirmation simply because the words are written down there, they might just sign it lightly and feel that they're not bound or compelled to be swearing to tell the truth, or in fact perhaps even care that they're telling the truth by signing their name here. So,
and again, Chair McPherson, Representative Flores, that's a problem that begins at the level of the president and works all the way down in modern society, as you know, as we saw with the underlying cause in the Clinton impeachment was false testimony under oath, where he probably was properly sworn or affirmed.
Thank you.
Mr. Jarrett, this probably goes beyond the scope of what's being accomplished in this bill, but you raised some interesting questions. Doesn't it depend on what the nature of the document is that's being notarized? That is, some documents, it's not, you're not necessarily declaring the truth of what's in the underlying document. Instead, you're simply representing that you are the person who signed, and then the notary's function is to affirm that this was the person who came in before and declared that's me that is signing this.
Yeah. Chair McPherson, members of the committee, there are a number of functions that notaries perform. The two most common are oaths and affirmations, which are used in affidavits, and acknowledgments, which are used in deeds, mortgages, trust deeds, and powers of attorney. Acknowledgments are not sworn or affirmed. Acknowledgments are the documents that have to go in the notary journal. Affidavits under Oregon law and regulations do not have to go in the notary journal. Many notaries don't really understand the difference, put everything in the journal. But the two functions are vastly different, and the ritual that I described is not required for acknowledgments, which are usually the documents with greater consequences in terms of conveying property, giving somebody a mortgage, giving somebody a power of attorney.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Flores.
And I would just underscore that when a person is preparing to sign that document in front of a notary as to having read this document, they are indicating that they've read this document and it's true as to the contents thereof and as they verily believe, to use the old language. So they are, in fact, affirming that this information that they are putting their name to is true and accurate.
Representative Bonamici.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was reading ahead a bit in Ms. Thompson's testimony, and apparently there's still a couple of areas where the use of an affidavit of attesting witnesses will still be required to be notarized in this area. Can you talk just a little bit, either of you, about what those circumstances are so we can kind of get a sense of where the notarization is still required?
Well, the two that are mentioned, Chair McPherson and members of the committee, the two that are mentioned are the affidavit of attesting witnesses to a will, which would still require notarization, and the affidavit of claiming successor, otherwise known as the small estate proceeding, so that in some circumstances there's a higher level of accountability to the execution of specific documents. But the balance of documents that are covered in this proposed legislation as amended covers a range of documents that could otherwise be challenged through the administrative process itself, for example, in the probate process. If there are objections to an accounting, there's an opportunity to raise those so that the language of under penalty of perjury ought to be sufficient for purposes of more routine, basic administrative documents and pleadings. Thank you.
Chair McPherson, Representative Bonamici, the issue with respect to the small estate affidavit, the affidavit of claiming successor, the bankers were opposed to making the change there. Their concern was that they felt that 90% of small estate affidavits are done without the assistance of an attorney, and that the person signing the affidavit should go through a higher degree of formality before they drop the document in court, get a certified copy, and wander into a bank to withdraw $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 from somebody's account. The concern with respect to the will affidavits is that under Oregon law and the law of most jurisdictions, an affidavit can be used in lieu of the personal testimony of the witness to a will in order to have a will admitted to probate. And the concern was we hadn't done sufficient research of the law of other states to determine whether the declaration under penalty of perjury would be sufficient. If we do a will in Oregon, we normally do the affidavits concurrently with execution of the will, and then the client moves to another jurisdiction where the will needs to be probated. It's extremely difficult 10, 20 years after the fact to track down a witness and get the affidavit done at that point, and we didn't want to force that onto people, and that's the reason that the declaration under penalty of perjury, was not used for those two circumstances.
Ms. Thompson, did you have any other remarks you wanted to offer up? I realize we drew you into questions here first, but
Chair McPherson, no. I just here on behalf of the section in support of the legislation as amended.
Okay, very good. Mr. Darris and Ms. Thompson, let me just make sure I understand fully the scope of what the proposed amendments would do. I thought I had, although I may have been getting a little confused by some of the other interchange, that this was essentially taking a function that in other forms of litigation is done without a notarized affidavit. I mean, if I'm handling a general civil litigation matter and I need to certify to the court that I have served a copy of what I filed with the court on opposing counsel, I just declare that I've done that, and I don't have to notarize that. And what I was taking away from this before is it's bringing probate practice in line with that general civil litigation practice. Is that too oversimplified?
No, Chair McPherson, that's correct. The core provision of the -2 amendments is on page 1 at lines 11 to 15, which refers to the Oregon Rules of Civil Procedure to become the standard rule in probate for proof of service or publication, as it is in general civil procedure. The remainder of the -2 amendments are directed at various provisions of the probate code that use the word affidavit to strike the reference to affidavit so that Section 7 now can become the controlling authority for proof of service or publication.
So there were some interesting broader issues about the function of notaries and how we use or maybe misuse notaries, but really that's maybe a debate for another time. We have a very rather limited bill here that's going to allow non-notarized but certified statements to be taken into probate practice as they are in other areas of practice.
Yes, strictly on documents that are filed in the probate court.
Right. Okay. Okay, any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Darris and Ms. Thompson. We're still in work session committee. Do I hear any further discussion or a motion on House Bill? The -2 amendments to House Bill 2362. Representative Barker.
Mr. Chair, I move the -2 amendments.
Representative Barker has moved the Dash 2 amendments into House Bill 2362. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? And the Dash 2 amendments are in the bill. Do I hear a motion on the bill as amended?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2362 to the floor with the due pass. So I believe this could go on the consent calendar as well.
I think so. Representative Barker has moved House Bill 2362 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation to be placed on the consent calendar. Any discussion? Hearing none, the clerk will call roll.
Aye.
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 Vice Chair Barker.
Aye.
Vice Chair
Wisnett.
Aye.
Chair McPherson.
Aye. House Bill 2362 is moved, as amended, is moved to the floor with a due pass recommendation for placement on the consent calendar. I will close the work session on House Bill 2362, and that concludes our agenda for today, committee. Thank you for your early attendance here on a Monday. We are adjourned.